It is a relief to say it's not hot.
In your house for some reason?
Yeah.
Never happens.
No, it is never this pleasant. Welcome to BC is Creepy. This is
Topher Graham.
I am
Ariel Hansen.
And together we are the duo behind Bad Cookie Pictures, but we also like to bring you creepy stories from BC.
Yeah, this is our podcast. Probably been listening if you got this far, or maybe you're a new listener.
Maybe you like listening based on topics rather than going through the whole thing. Who knows? But today's
topic has only been described to me as Ariel's favorite murder.
Yep.
And I have no idea what that means. So I'm really excited to hear this.
Okay, so the notes are going away for the beginning.
Oh man, off the cuffs.
Oh, off the cuff, because what we're going to do today, this is a story that I heard when we did that haunted trolley tour.
Yeah.
So what I'm going to do today is I'm going to tell you what I remember from the haunted trolley tour. Like, I tell this story to a bunch of people all the time because it's like a movie.
It's incredible, isn't it?
Yeah. And so it's actually like a very specific movie, but I'm going to tell you guys what I tell people, and then I'm going to go into the actual facts. Because nice. It turns out, what I remember from the trolley tour, and even some of the stuff from the trolley tour, might not be what actually happened. As you know, ghost stories tend to get embellished and everything.
Yeah. I've done that. I've embellished. Not here.
Okay, I was about to say, we are a hard...
We do research.
Research-based podcast. Okay, so I like to sort of introduce this story as if the movie Halloween was real.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that's the... Yep. So that's why this popped into my head is, like, my favorite murder from that tour and just in general. So it was, like, back in the 1960s, and this teenage kid was living in this house with his family just off of Main Street. And so near here.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. And so it's Christmas Eve. His mom's working late. And so he decides, you know what? I'm going to make some hot chocolate for the family.
Oh, that's really nice. He seems like a sweet kid.
Yeah. So he makes hot chocolate for everyone. And when the mom gets home, she has some hot chocolate too.
Oh, what a happy family.
And then everyone falls asleep except him.
Yeah. Oh, because they're so just warmed in their bellies.
In their bellies with sleeping pills.
Oh, no.
And then he decides to take an axe. And he goes from room to room, murdering everyone in their sleep until he gets to his baby brother.
When he gets to
his baby brother, you know, he can't get up the nerve to swing an axe to him. Instead, he decides it's gonna suffocate him, so he takes a pillow, puts it over the baby's head.
Oh, no.
Holds it down, and he thinks he's done it. So then he's killed everyone in the family. He goes downstairs and he calls up his psychiatrist and says, I've done a really bad thing. And then the psychiatrist gets there and the police gets there and everyone's dead except the baby. Because it turned out he did not suffocate the baby properly. So the baby goes into witness protection and everything, probably has a different name.
So we can't call him up for an interview, is what you're saying.
And then this teenage guy goes to Riverview.
Yeah.
Then years later, Riverview gets shut down and everyone gets released. And so he's back on the street.
It is Halloween.
Yes! It is Halloween, except with a bureaucratic reason why he gets out.
Oh no, does he go after the kid?
As far as I know,
let's imagine he disappeared. That he goes after the kid.
Yeah.
Wait, hard research based. Yeah.
So that was the story.
Yeah.
Now we're going to get into the actual facts.
Nice.
Yeah, because there's a lot about my story that I learned is wrong.
Oh, thank God. Everybody's okay. The hot chocolate was just a pleasant drink.
Well, first off, it wasn't actually hot chocolate. It was chocolate milkshakes, apparently.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Or that's like in all of the retellings that I found online, they would say it was chocolate milkshakes. So first things first, didn't take place on Christmas Eve.
Okay.
It actually took place on December 10th. 1965.
So they didn't even get, like, presents.
Yeah, they didn't get one last Christmas. The family was the Cosburgs. And so the parents were Osborne and Dorothy. Then there were the children, Thomas, who was 16, 17 at the time. According to the police museum, 16. According to other sources, 17. I'm inclined to go with the police museum. He's the one who killed everyone.
Yeah, Thomas.
He had a younger brother named Barry, who was 15.
Yeah.
A younger sister named Marianne, who was 13.
Yeah.
Another younger sister named Gail, who was 11.
Oh, gosh.
Another younger brother named Vincent, who was 2.
Oh.
And then the baby, Osborne.
Oh, no, that means the 2-year-old got chopped and...
Yes! Yeah, the baby, Osborne Jr.
Cool.
So, other facts that have been in a bunch of retellings that I didn't have in mine was that it's actually the dad who was coming home late from work, not the mom.
Yeah.
And also, the mother had one of her friends over named Florence.
Yeah.
And she left by 11 p.m.
Oh, well, she must be... feel pretty lucky.
Yeah. Now, last September, a criminologist named Heidi Curie gave a talk that cleared up a lot of the misconceptions and improper facts, as well as some things to do with the trial. And so...
Oh, that's a really nice thing to do.
Yeah. So, the fact-checking time.
Yeah.
There was a large span of time between the murders and when they were actually reported. So, the murders happened around 1 a.m.,
mm-hmm.
And then they were reported at about 7:45 a.m.
So he had like a long time to think about it before he called his psychiatrist.
We're going to get to that as well.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, like I say, mine was a cool story.
Yeah.
The facts still cool, but also horrible, because I mean, it's a murder. But it's definitely more plausible and stuff.
Less like a movie. Yeah. Halloween.
Yeah, so the police received that call at like 7:45 in the morning.
Yeah.
And it was from Dr. Bennett Wong.
Yeah.
And he was the psychiatrist who had been treating Thomas prior to the incident. And so it turned out that Thomas, after he committed the murders, drove his dad's 1954 sedan to Dr. Wong's house. And then he confessed to him, "I've done something awful."
Yeah.
Yeah, so we still have the confession to the psychiatrist. It's just a bit different.
Not on the phone.
Yeah, not on the phone. He actually left the house, went to his psychiatrist's home, and did the confession there. Now, the Cosburg house was in a strange state of disarray when the police got there. Photos showed that most of the cupboards and all the drawers were left open. There was, like, shoe polish and shaving cream left in the kitchen, beer bottles everywhere, and also the axe was delicately placed just standing up next to the stove.
Okay.
So that seems a little strange for everyone having died in their sleep and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, here's one way that the story actually gets kind of a lot sadder.
Yeah.
So Marianne, the oldest daughter, she was 13. She was still alive when the police found her.
Oh.
And when she got to the hospital, they did surgeries to try and save her life.
Yeah.
But 9 days later, because her head and brain injuries were so bad, she passed away.
Oh, like 10 days of suffering.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, it's also like 1960s medicine rather than modern medicine. So who knows, she might have survived if...
And also if there hadn't been that great leap of 8 hours.
Yeah, that as well. Osborne Jr., who was the baby.
Yeah.
He was 6 months old at the time. And as I said, he was found alive and unharmed and likely went on to live with family members who lived nearby.
Yeah.
Presumably he's still alive. But also he had survived a strangulation attempt rather than a suffocation attempt.
Yeah.
So Thomas had tried to strangle him instead of trying to smother him with a pillow.
Yeah. With his hands.
Yeah. The pillow just seems more dramatic because it's like, I can't look into his eyes. just shh, go to sleep. Go
to sleep. Strangulation, he's like forcefully trying.
Yeah.
Probably looking at him right in the eyes.
Yeah. Now, some facts before this had happened. Thomas had actually been admitted to the Crease Clinic, which is now Riverview, in 1961 when he was 13, which at the time it was like a state-of-the-art mental health facility where patients go to get better.
Oh, yeah.
So he had been
hospitalized
for mental health issues before.
Yeah.
Which would explain why he had a therapist he went to.
Yeah.
Or psychiatrist. And another thing that just makes it a much sadder story is that Thomas had reached out to Dr. Wong 2 days before the murder, but couldn't get a hold of him.
Oh, no.
And then there's also reports saying that Dr. Wong was trying to get in touch with him, but his messages never made it to Thomas. So it's like, if they'd been able to connect and talk it out, this might never have happened.
Yeah. Oh, it was like a bad phone tag game gone wrong.
Yep. And then another misconception is it's completely unconfirmed whether or not he drugged his family before murdering them.
Uh-huh. So we've got the stories that say the chocolate milkshake, but we have nothing, like, forensically.
Yeah, there are reports that said that he made them the chocolate milkshakes with the sleeping pills, but that evidence has yet to be confirmed, and it's, like, how many years later?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's, like, a lot of the facts surrounding the murder specifically. And then there were a lot of things that went wrong with the trial proceedings.
Oh, no.
Yeah, or at least by today's standards, they're wrong.
Vancouver police.
Yep.
They always seem to come out as, like, the villains in these stories.
I don't know if I'd say that they were the villains in this one.
No.
No, but I mean, it's kind of clear.
Yeah.
But who knows, though? Like, maybe they didn't investigate things enough.
Yeah.
So, first things first, there was no transcript from the trial of Thomas Cosberg. Instead, the police only documented the amount of time witnesses were interviewed.
Oh, that's not enough.
Yeah. There was a lot of big, hasty assumptions that the police and the media were making about this murder. The biggest one was that Thomas was unhinged or mentally unstable.
Yeah.
Yeah, but his, like, admission of doing something awful and also his, like, planning of the murder
makes him, like, competent.
Yeah, shows a comprehension that was not really explored enough by the authorities.
Which is why he didn't go to prison and ended up in Riverview.
Yeah.
Which is why he got out.
Yep.
Thanks, VPD.
Yep.
And the media.
Yeah.
Those guys are jerks.
Yeah, we just gotta remember that everything has, at least in terms of policing and judicial system, things have really improved since then.
Yeah.
Like, there's also a lot more laws to do with, like, young offenders and mental health related aspects to crimes. Now, the investigation of why he chose an axe for a weapon, if they'd actually done that, it could have revealed insights into the murder. But they never did, so they don't know why he chose it, if he'd ever actually used one before, if that was, like, something that was a part of his life.
1965. That's, like, before Mindhunter, so maybe there wasn't even, like, well, there's no, like, FBI profiling.
Here it would be RCMP profiling.
They still wouldn't have done it.
Yep. Yeah. Well, also, because our system is so different, I don't know if the RCMP would even have jurisdiction to come into Vancouver.
No, probably not.
No. That's another thing. Also, like, the fact that they didn't investigate into the house being, like, disgusting and everything
means they missed out on, well, motive.
Yeah, well, because also the state of the house and the kitchen seemed very unusual if the mom had a guest over.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I might not clean up the house very much before you come over, but that's because...
Yeah.
You know that...
I don't... Yeah, it doesn't matter.
And also, you come over with purpose.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to impress you anymore.
Fine. Guess not.
Because you're such a good friend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really sweet.
Yeah.
I promise I won't drug you and axe you.
Thank you. Good. So there wasn't anything weird in that pizza.
Yeah.
Good, good.
But I made that promise just now, so. So, BC is creepy. It's just me now.
I can't move. What did you do to me, Delbert?
Just kidding. Now, criminologist Curie then also described, like, the court proceedings that happened 2 years after the murders happened. So apparently, this is to quote her, "the fastest I've ever heard of. The case was decided before it even went to court."
Oh.
So some of the things would be the fact that witnesses were only interviewed for minutes.
Yeah.
Yep. And the entire process of assessing Thomas, declaring him not guilty by reason of insanity, and then sending him to Riverview, it took, like, only weeks.
Gosh.
Yeah. You can think of, like, a 6-person murder trial nowadays. That would take, like, a year.
Yeah. 6 weeks? That doesn't mean... I could watch, like, Law and Order and it'd be, like, longer. Like...
Yeah. Because also that means that he, like, if he'd just done a regular old guilty plea, I could see it being that fast. Because wouldn't they just, like, move on to victim impact and sentencing? Well, I mean,
he did, like, a confession, right?
Yeah, but...
So he admitted to the crime.
But that wasn't in court.
Yeah.
In court, he was going for they were going for the insanity.
So they didn't have to, like, prove his incompetency?
Or they just didn't look into it very much. I think they officially said that he was schizophrenic. Yeah, in my notes later on it says that. But yeah, they, like...
They just wanted to get it through fast.
Yeah, yeah. Like, so this talk that Curie gave, a lot of the audience members were, like, asking why the police and courts were, like, trying to push this through so fast. And she said that the crimes were just, like, too terrifying and horrifying for the general public to actually believe.
Yeah.
Someone could be of right mind and do them. So they, by like labeling him as being mentally unhinged, which his diagnosis officially was schizophrenia, that gave like the general public this sense of relief. Like,
it's not gonna happen to me. Yeah. There's just one crazy person.
One crazy person. The system's gonna take care of everything, make everything better. And the other reason that they were going for that was because that way he wouldn't have to face the death penalty, which would...
We still had the death penalty in 1965?
Yep.
Oh.
Yep, because the public would have thought it distasteful for such a young person to get that sentence.
Yeah, don't kill kids.
Yeah, don't kill anyone.
Don't kill anyone. Yeah.
No, make them live with what they've done and contribute to society. Reform
them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, reform them, but also, like, in ways that contribute to society, too.
Yeah.
Restorative justice.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So then when Curie finished her presentation, she talked about what happened after his conviction, or not conviction, I guess, but his trial, declaring him not criminally responsible by reason of insanity. So he was sent for rehabilitation at Riverview Hospital.
Yeah.
And then, this is another way that my story got it wrong. He was released in 1977 because doctors thought that he was, like, better.
Oh.
It wasn't that he got just released when they closed down most of Riverview.
Well, that's really nice.
Yeah, so he was considered to be rehabilitated, so he got back into regular society at the age of 27, so he was in Riverview for about 10 years.
Yeah.
And then he was legally released.
Okay.
And then,
where is he now? Is he okay?
Well, he died in 2016.
Oh.
But...
So no.
But...
Wait, that sounds really young.
Let's see, so... I mean, that is fairly young, but he did work at the Children's Hospital for 30 years, so he had a full career.
Working with children.
Yeah, or I think I saw somewhere that he was, like, more working in the science side.
Okay.
But most sources just said worked at the Children's Hospital.
So that's kind of a happy ending.
And he also, like, had a wife and stuff.
Oh.
But apparently his wife passed away before him.
Oh.
And then also when he died, apparently he'd requested to not have a funeral.
Like, at all?
Yeah. Oh. Like, no service.
Oh.
Yeah.
Must have been, like, a little bit guilty.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see that. Well, because I also, when I Googled him specifically, the first thing to come up was his obituary. And then this website that does obituaries has a comments section or a condolences section.
Oh, no.
And someone posted as Osborne Jr.
No. Oh, okay. Continue.
I don't remember what they said, but it was, like, a little cutting. And then someone else was like, if you're really Osborne, I'm so sorry for the loss of your family. Or, like, you could kind of tell that the person posting had been a bit sarcastic when they'd been like, my condolences, or something like that.
Oh. Internet trolls.
Yeah. But who knows, it could have been him and just, he was really pissed off that his big brother killed his whole family.
I mean, I would be too.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, like, it's been 30 years. Like, get over it.
Over 30 years.
Over 30 years.
It's been, like, 50 years.
That's such a crazy story.
Yeah.
I think the craziest part is that he just, like, got released.
And
like,
lived
had a life.
A normal life. Yeah. That's, like he...
That's wild to me.
He was, I guess, clearly able to be rehabilitated.
Yeah. That's a great story.
Yeah. So it's, like, the happiest ending a murder...
ever had.
Yeah.
It's wonderful. I hope somebody, like, has a... happier ending. I hope this is like can just keep building.
Keep building? I don't know.
If you have a happier ending to a murder
or any other creepy BC story,
please send it to us at badcookiepictures@gmail.com.
Yeah. So that was the story of the Cosburg family murders.
That's incredible.
Thanks. I told you it's my favorite murder.
Yeah. I can see why.
Yeah, it's just got a lot of intrigue and everything. So my sources, of course, are the Haunted Trolley Tour.
Yeah.
Main source was the Vancouver Police Museum website. And then there was also this website, evelazarus.com, which she...
Heard of it, I think.
Yeah? Okay, cool. But yeah, so those were my three main sources. I also found some other ones, but they pretty much said the exact same story as evelazarus.com, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, but that was my murder this week, and that means...
That means I have to find another non-murder?
Yes, I did that to you.
You suck. All right.
Okay. So, if you enjoyed our tale of terror and you want to hear, see more stuff from Bad Cookie Pictures, you should head on over to our Patreon.
Yeah.
Yeah, consider joining our Patreon community, giving us money.
It's really fun. What level do they get to join the Discord?
Any level.
Any level?
Any level.
Any level, you can have, like, personal conversations with us.
Yeah, we've got a...
private Patreon Discord.
Yeah, we've got a Discord for our Patreons. For those who don't know what Discord is, it's, like, a chat service, except with a lot of organizational aspect. Basically, you have a group, and then you can have, like, different sections within that for different topics. So, if you want to just chat about your upcoming Halloween costume, or anything like that, if you join our Patreon, you can get access to that, and we can give you costume advice or any other spooky...
Goes directly talk. To our phones.
Yeah, yeah, we would be able to talk to you whenever, wherever. Now, also, social media time!
Yay! Plug. We're on everything!
We're on everything! Just look Bad Cookie Pictures up on any kind of social media, except LinkedIn, because...
Too much of a hassle.
Yeah, and we don't want it spamming all our friends with invites constantly.
So you can find us Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, Vimeo.
That's it for now.
Yeah.
Maybe we should start a Pinterest just so we can add to that list.
With like a single picture.
I love to pin, you know that.
It would be a lot of pictures. We should start a Pinterest. By the time this is so on air.
Look Bad Cookie Pictures up on Pinterest.
Excellent.
Yes. If you want to find Topher on social media, where can they find you?
I'm Sneezing Wolf. You can find me on Snapchat and Instagram.
Mostly Instagram.
Mostly Instagram. That's my favorite one.
And then I do the Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. I do not do Snapchat, but you can look me up as @HansonsHorror on all those things, and it'll be me. Yeah. Anything else we need to update?
No.
No.
Thanks for listening.
Yeah, no, we can't make any of the announcements yet.
I know. We're this close.
Or wait, when this
we
airs.
Wait.
This airs like 2 weeks from now.
All right. Yeah. Two weeks.
Yeah, because we missed that week.
Okay, if you want to see Paint the Town Red in Vancouver, you
can... Oh, that's not even the one we had to wait for.
You can come to Cinema Fantastique.
We will be there.
We will be there. If you'd like to see The Devil and I...
Yes.
We'll be at the Edmonton International Film Festival.
Which is at the end of September.
Yeah.
Beginning of October.
And we'll be there.
Yes.
In Edmonton.
In person. For the world premiere...
of The Devil and I.
Woo!
I'm really excited about this one, guys.
Yeah, and we still have other things we can't announce to you yet. Oh, but we can say, if you're in San Diego and you want to see Nepenthes, it will be playing at Horrible Imaginings Film Festival, which is at the end of this month.
I can't make that one.
I can't make it either, unfortunately.
But we love you,
yes, we
San
love
Diego.
You, San Diego, and thank you so much again for programming us this year. It's really cool to know that we're playing down there in your awesome festival. Yeah.
Yes.
So that's it for upcoming appearances and everything for now, but...
But stay creepy.